Calling all units, calling all units. Donut shop has a fresh dozen. Go ahead and take a 1040.
So the Shield.
Yeah.
The Shield. Apparently a television show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That aired in the 2000s that I have to go now and watch.
Yep. I may actually have all the DVDs because I used to buy the DVD sets of that show.
All right. Well, then that's going to be added to the playlist. And you know what else is going to be added to the playlist? This podcast episode. Welcome back to the Donut Job podcast. Yeah, you can start it right when I said The Shield.
Yeah.
So anyways, this is what I wanted to do. Is try to pronounce your name again.
All right, here
you go. So we call him Jack, which is short for a nickname. But before we get into this, welcome back to the show, Donut Shop Podcast, broadcasting from Feds Apparel. Visit fedsapparel.com for any uniform needs that you have. And I even have a store on there where you can buy this shirt. Okay.
Who are you pointing at?
I don't know. I'm pointing to the people.
I'm pointing They're over there.
to those people out there. Anyways, we have a special guest on the show, my friend. My friend so much that I have a, I don't know what it is. I can't say rural. I have a problem saying rural.
Mm-hmm.
That's and then your last name is, I don't know why. Because we'll see if Justin can get it.
Okay.
Even though Justin's very, he's
very articulate.
Yeah, and he's it's very surprising how he can pronunciate stuff. So I'll go after you. You ready?
All right.
We're going to spell it.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
I'm going to put the computer
put it on
screen
the, Yeah.
All right,
so
type it. Computer screen
type
up.
It so you can look at it, visualize it, and then we'll see.
And then at home, I want you to also try.
Okay, go for it.
Try this and how to say it. So go ahead and spell it.
It's F-R-E-I-R-E.
Mm-hmm. So... And we're going to give Justin an opportunity.
Justin's eyes just...
You can use it in a sentence.
I mean, I had a frittata last night. No, it was a frit last night.
All right.
Friere.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and say Ferrer. And that's
Ferrar.
How I... Ferrari. Ferrari some. but I like to call him Jack. So do you want to... we'll take a moment at home.
Ferrari.
Let them try. They're trying now.
Ferrere.
I guarantee
trying. He's getting there. He's getting there. Yeah.
Because it's the combination kind of all the vowels.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the... Because you've got to have a long and then a short.
Okay,
and then
so
it makes
again,
it like
at
a long.
Home, it's F-R-E-I-R-E. All right. I think that's long enough.
Friere.
Final answer?
Friere. Well, I'm sorry. Can we have a country of origin?
Here's the thing.
Good.
Okay. Tell me more of the country of origin. Go
ahead. It comes supposedly from Spain and Portugal.
Okay. I was getting the Portuguese. I was getting the Portuguese, and then that European Spanish.
As you say it in your head, let me just tell a quick anecdotal.
No. I'm done. I'm gonna go with.
He is a high ranking officer. So imagine you're a police officer and you're looking at his last name like, oh my god, how do I say this? So nerve-wracking.
Just get by saying commander.
Yeah,
commander.
Yeah, commander.
Commander.
Yeah.
Commander. Like, yeah. You know, they all these guys.
What if they're in a room and there's multiple commanders and they're trying to say him and they're like, well, which commander are you speaking of? That guy, right?
I mean, people do it with my last name, Yarborough.
Yeah.
Like, they have a tough time with Yarborough, but that's like the most English language general use of vowels.
All right. I don't want to eat too much more time. Go, Justin, go. What do you got?
Friere.
All right.
I don't know if
I'm still saying Friere.
Justin was a lot closer, like about 4 or 5 back.
I've known you for 16 years. I get away with Jack. You know? Yeah. Go ahead. What do you got?
It's Freire.
Freire.
That's what I was saying, like four names back. Yeah. I think you kind of said Friere.
And he was talking about the Friere.
Yeah. So you're close.
It's still that E. But it's still that E at the end that kind of.
Yeah.
Is it missing an accent? Should I have put, is there like a tilde or some sort of an accent mark that belongs up there? Are you sure it just wasn't the people at Ellis Island that wrote it wrong?
Yeah, they erased it when I got here.
They go, we don't need those. Those cost money.
Actually, first place was LA. So yeah, they probably erased it. Who knows?
Yeah.
What do they call you in boot camp? Did they just say
Friar? Oh my God, Friar.
Friar.
Yeah. Well, it was recruit. recruit. Because Marines, they use recruit. So it was like Friar, Frary. Then some of the guys in my platoon were like, "Hey, Friar, talk." You know, and it becomes a joke. I mean, I've dealt with it since I was a kid. So you can imagine, the best part was watching a teacher, or whoever, they're reading.
Franklin.
This one's a rough one. Yeah. I already knew. It got to the point where I was like, "That's me." Yeah. It's Freire.
They're like Jake Quillen.
Yeah. Jake.
Freire.
So so we already said that you were in the military service. You were in the military. You're in the Marines. So we already kind of even saying it without saying it said it. So you're on the show. I'm saying a lot of nothing right now. You're on the show. One, we're friends. Two, you served in the military, are serving in the military, commanding officer at a very large agency, and you are an Iron Man, what is it called? Iron Man...
participant, I guess you could say.
Can't you just say an Ironman?
Triathlete. You could say triathlete.
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 But don't you get qualified as being an Ironman if you finish it?
Yeah, you are an Ironman. That's what they say at the end.
Yeah.
You get that on the way. After suffering all day. You are an Ironman, and they'll say your name.
Mm.
So they'll say Jack Ferrer, you are an Iron Man.
But did they say
did they stumble?
Did they say it like that?
Believe it or not, the guy that announced the one that I did, the fool that I did, which was 2011 in Wisconsin, he actually said it. Mm. I was like, wow, okay. This guy's been practicing.
It wasn't it's not like a graduation where you have to whisper it in the person's ear right before, you know? Yeah.
Or they pull you to the side, how do you say this? So we don't look bad.
Yeah, that's true. I butcher places. Where was it that we had a discussion? Illinois. I butcher everything. Right. So if it's not and sometimes I say tahi, but if it's not that, I suck. So no offense. You're still my boy.
Not taken.
And then also we want to ask the audience, and we've been sending a message out, something that happened personally to your family. We're going to save that for the end, but we definitely want to reach out to the audience about this and see if we can help you out. And that's, the main reason why we're here. But you are a man of many traits, and you've done a lot of things. And I was like, man, let's talk about some things. So we can start with the law enforcement stuff because we have a law enforcement-centric audience.
Yeah.
A lot of aspiring police officers that want to join the force and want to learn about what it's going to be like. And then we have some officers right now listening on Midnights. Shout out to you guys out there in the Midnights. Got us on.
Hit the air horn. Beep, beep, beep. Yeah.
Or send us a photo if you're not driving and you're just parked somewhere. Send us a photo and we'll post it up on our...
share it on the story.
Yeah, we'll share it on our Instagram. But make sure you go follow us on Instagram at donutshoppod.com. No, wait, was it?
Yep, Donut Shop Podcast.
Donut Shop Podcast. Thing. Yeah, there it is on our Instagram. But anyways...
Donut Shop Pod on Instagram. I thought you were saying the website.
Yeah, no.
Donut Shop Podcast.
So, let's bring it back. How many years you got on?
23. With the department.
Yeah, so prior to that, did you join the military after, or were you a Marine before that?
Yeah, so I was right out of high school. I went into the Marine Corps, finished my enlistment around 96, and then I started applying to get into law enforcement.
Mm.
And first stop was corrections.
Oh, that's nice. Right. So you have you were in corrections. How was corrections? How was that?
Very interesting.
Yeah, we haven't had a corrections.
We got to get one.
We got to get somebody on. So if you're out there and you want to join the show, we're waiting for you. Yeah. But go ahead.
Very interesting place to work. Back then, we're talking about 98, 99. I don't know what kind of, less lethal they have, if they have anything at all. But back then, you didn't have anything with you. Mm. So it was a lot of interpersonal skills to deal with situations.
So where did you work? Because I know there's state corrections.
Correct. So I worked at state corrections. I worked at two different places. Because with state corrections, you can move around. And when they needed help, they would pull you to different places. Back then, I don't know how it is now, since I've been out of it for a while.
Did you ever have any close to riots or anybody trying to escape or something?
No, but I had a couple people. So one of the locations was Broward Correctional Institution. It's no longer there. It was closed down. It's actually
the one that used to be in Pines by Perry Airport.
No,
or no,
way out west by US 27.
Oh, Sheridan. Yeah.
So that at the time was the only women's state prison down here in the South Florida area. There was another one upstate, and I forgot where the other one was, but that one actually housed death row inmates.
Mm.
Female death row inmates. So I got to deal with like three or four that were really famous. Eileen Wuornos was there. So
no shit.
Before she got executed.
Move the mic. Sorry. No, move the. Yeah, there you go.
There we go.
Yeah. Eileen Wuornos from the movie Monster.
Monster.
Charlize Theron.
From the movie Monster, not the actress, but the person that they were depicting. Right. Yeah. She was there.
So she was there. There was another.
That's right. I remember that because that was like the high school. That was when I was in high school.
She was killing truck drivers up and down the state of Florida.
Mm.
They would pick her up and then she'd kill them. Another one, I can't remember her name off the top of my head right now, but they called her the Black Widow. She killed like two ex-husbands and her son. Like she rat poisoned them, did all this. And then during the time that I was there, I want to say the Black Widow was executed. They took her upstate and she was executed.
So they do lethal injection, right?
Yeah, I believe those got lethal injection.
It was like early 90s, I think, Sparky was...
95, 95. I think around 95.
I'll try to do...
95 or 96, they had an issue with the chair.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was, I think, the last execution. And then they started with the lethal injection. So,
well, that's crazy. Think about an electric chair.
Yeah.
Like you're getting strapped. I mean, listen, if you're sitting there, you know, hopefully you did something to get there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but that's just a crazy way to go.
Yeah. So 1924 to 2000, Florida used the electric chair as execution.
But I don't think they used it on them. I think they got lethal injection. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's been so long and I didn't go. But I know when I was there during that time is when they took her and she was executed that they signed the death warrant.
Hmm.
January 2000, lethal injection. So it was just a transition.
Yeah.
I wonder if there was a qualification to get one or the other. You think, like, what qualifies when there's two options? Is it the person that, I don't know, I just find that interesting. I can't remember
off the top of my head.
No, I'm just...
Well, Eileen Wuornos was executed in 2002 by lethal injection at Florida State Penitentiary. So the transition happened in 2000. End of old Sparky to... It was old technology and the Y2K bug was going to mess it up. So we don't want like...
If you look up the Black Widow, you'll be able to find her name. I can't remember, but they have a documentary because I just recently saw it on, you know, ID channel or something. They had the whole case on her and everything she did, and it was crazy.
Yeah,
and that was here in Florida.
Judias Goodyear Bueno Año.
Yeah, but I think they called her Bueno.
Okay,
Judy Bueno.
She was convicted and sentenced to life for the May 13th, 1980 drowning and murder of her paralyzed son in Santa Rosa County. So up in the Panhandle, she had two death warrants signed and stayed in March 30th, 1998. The state of Florida executed.
Yeah, I was already working there. That's the one.
So that was 1998.
So what happens is
hold on, let's move that because the mic's like
here. I go. I gotta stay close.
There you go. Get up there.
Get up.
She caught the electric chair.
Oh, she caught the electric chair.
She caught the electric chair.
Ooh. I thought it was lethal injection, but what happens to her
executed by electrocution.
Yeah. Jeez. What happened to her was the paralyzed son was actually had gone to the army, done his tour in the army. And then during his tenure in the army and when he got out, she started feeding him rat poison. Mm. And that's what paralyzed him because she couldn't kill him. She also had like an ex-husband and an ex-boyfriend that she was implicated in their deaths too by
1980. She took Michael, her son, out in a canoe.
The canoe rolled.
Yeah. Michael weighed down by his arm and his legs in braces, drowned. Following his death, she opened a beauty salon.
Yeah, she was. Yeah,
but you get old by that. It's like,
and then
you deserve that.
She was in a relationship with John Gentry, who was severely injured when his car exploded after a friend gathering in Pensacola.
So she got
the Green Mile.
Mm. That's what I was gonna say. You watched Green Mile?
Yes.
When they didn't put the wet sponge,
Poisey. Yeah.
That's what happened. I think there was a point, and I would have to go back and research it, but there was a point in the mid-90s where they had a mishap with a guy, it was a Cuban guy that had done, I think, like two murders, and they went to electrocute him, and something happened that the sponge wasn't conducive, or they took the wrong kind of sponge that they have to put, and the guy like literally burned.
Yeah, that's...
He was electrocuting and burning at the same time to where he caught fire.
Which is green, what happened in the Green Mile.
Right, right.
Nuts. I don't know. I can't even fathom that.
No.
They're there for a reason.
He's known for frequent malfunction in the 1990s, namely Jesse Tefero in 90, Pedro Medina in 97.
I think it was Pedro Medina.
Yeah.
Those are Hispanic guys.
Sounds like a Cuban guy.
Yeah.
and so it names three of them in Florida. And it says reportedly 6-inch flames shot out of Tefero, which is the first guy, Tefero's head, and 12-inch flames shot out of Medina's head.
I'm not trying to laugh.
The electric chair was cruel and unusual punishment.
And I think the problem was back then, the problem was the sponges. You had to use like specific sponges.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where they were getting them from, but it was that would conduce the electric and keep it through. But they used, the wrong sponge or whatever happened.
Magic erasers.
It was the same year
that Magic Eraser came out, and they're... Little mishap with the magic eraser.
It says to ensure proper contact between the inmate's head and the electrodes, the saline-soaked sponge stuffed between the two was necessary. In Tefero's incident, the natural sponge was replaced with a synthetic sponge that caught fire during the execution. Yeah. Oh, and in Medina's case, prison officials apparently did not properly soak the saline, and it caught fire as well. Right. Photographs provided at... Oh, okay. Right.
I don't want to get too far into things.
Yeah. Just basically, you can watch The Green Mile, great movie, and it'll tell somewhat of that story.
And we can just keep it general. And I do want to make this quick statement, and we don't have to get into this at all. But I just find it nuts that those people got the death penalty, and this guy from, I'm not going to say his name, from Stoneman Douglas, didn't get it. So that's all I'm going to say about that. I believe that is nuts.
Yeah.
But that's for another podcast, not this one. So you did 2 years in corrections?
Yeah. So then the other place I worked was South Florida Reception Center,
mm-hmm.
which is like the processing location at the time. I don't know how it's done now,
mm-hmm.
but the people that are basically confined to state prison would go there, and then they'd get shipped out from there. But then some people would wind up staying there. And I wound up being there for a short period of time. And during the time I was there, it was every night there was an incident. Because they brought a bunch of what they were called. I don't know if they referred to them the same inmates.
Mm.
They brought them down from Palm Beach County. I think they had like some issue with the facility. So they brought them down. But these are inmates that had to be separated. They're called close management. They're called closed management inmates. So you have to keep them separate from each other because they're violent or, they got issues. Yeah. And they put all of them in a squad bay.
Oh.
Yeah. So it was like, I guess like you could say the Royal Rumble every night.
Oh, my
and
God.
And every night there was an incident, guys getting stabbed, head cracked open,
Jeez.
And then the next day when I would come in, because I was working midnights, the next day when I would come in, the numbers, like, we started with 75 in the squad bay on each side, and every day I would come in, it would get lower and lower, because then they had to pull them out of there and confine them.
Yeah. So the difference between state and local, if we're listening, because we do have officers that are, or not officers, but aspiring, and they're just learning about all this stuff, and is that state, you go more than a year. If you're
365 or more, if you're charged with a felony, and it's 365 or more, 365 or less, or 364 is county jail,
which I've been to, not personally, but as for professional purposes, and especially the old DCJ.
Yeah,
I think it was not a nice place to be. Yeah. I'll just leave it at that. Yeah. I don't know how state prison was. If it was a little bit cleaner or less rats, but
I mean, they had their issues, but yeah, DCJ, I was there as a rookie officer several times.
Yeah.
And it was quite an interesting place. Like you said.
Yeah. It's the 364s. Those damn renters just ruining the neighborhood.
In college, I used to do tours of the federal penitentiary that's up in Leesburg area, north of Orlando, because I was in Orlando. And that was interesting in itself. It's also a different style crime, and it's a different crime. But they had violent people, but they had us just walking around. Whereas when we would visit Orange counties, you were, there was a wall. Yeah. But in the Fed one, you were walking down the hall and they just said, kind of keep together and stay with your officers. But we were walking right there with inmates in the federal penitentiary. And they had some interesting, you know, just the one things that sticks out was interesting places of worship, because you got to afford everybody's ability to worship that has whatever version. And there was one that had like, there's like a wooden stick hut or something like that. Like it looked like a, almost like a wooden igloo or like whatever. And they go in there and that's, they do their prayers of whatever religion that was and stuff. It was, I was like, oh, okay. You know, it's just little things that I remember. And then seeing like Converse, which was like the premium shoe that you could buy in the commerce area there. But the cool thing about the federal one was that they had a factory that made all the office furniture that all the federal agencies use in their offices. Yeah. So they make the furniture there. So, and they teach these guys to trade, and they're upholstering freaking swivel chairs and doing all that kind of stuff. And so if you go into like an FBI offices, all the stickers on the bottom, the brand is the federal agency. Agencies. And so
they have that for the state, but it's more in Northern Florida correctional centers is where they have that.
Yeah.
That some of the inmates still have that trade where they build out furniture. They do all kinds of stuff, because I've seen the labels as well.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just stamping license plates and stuff like you think, or so, like they show on TV.
Long story short, we need to get some corrections out people on here.
Oh, definitely. Get somebody from corrections. Yeah. You know, I tip my hat. I mean, it was definitely a great learning experience, because I think it helped me a lot when I transferred over to, you know, the road. But, you know, I tip my hat off to the guys and girls that work in corrections. It's not an easy job. Yeah. It's not an easy job, because you're pretty much locked in there with them. Like when I was working there, you're locked in the dorms, squad bays, whatever you call them. You're in there with them.
And we don't have to go, because I think we're going a lot. But the human behavior, you can see the tells and things which would transfer over to the street when you're out there. Okay.
That's one thing I learned. So, you know, some of the guys and girls that taught me when I was, you know, a rookie correction officer, you know, they're like, watch them and you'll see. And you sit there and you watch them, because they're watching you.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Yeah.
They know when you're having a good day. They know when you're having a bad day. They know everything, because what they have
nothing else to do.
Nothing else to do. Yeah. So they got time on their hand. And, you know, some of them will try and, you know, befriend you, and others just mind their own business. So it's interesting. It's definitely a very interesting observation between both. So, but it translates out to the street.
But at one point, people are out there, and then they go in there.
Well, and they'll come back in. Like there was people that I was there. They got out, and then they violated their probation or whatever, and you know, went right back in. So I'm like, didn't you just get out like 6 months ago? Yeah, I violated, so I'm back in. And you know, you get a mixture. Yeah. Some, you know, you talk to, you know, obviously you keep your distance, because you know that there's always some way. Some people got caught up in it. Some correction officers got caught up, you know, bringing in stuff for inmates and stuff like that. But, you know, you just keep your guard up. But you definitely, it's interesting, because they know when you're having a good day, and they know when you're coming in, like that you're having issues.
Yeah.
They pick that up right away.
That's why you got to, I guess, stay super vigilant to who's interacting with you and what's behind whatever they're doing.
And they've looked out for officers. You know, some officers have gotten assaulted, and, you know, they've had inmates come to their rescue and help them. You know, so it works both ways, kind of like out on the street.
I know we went to the corrections aspect of your life, but I don't want to gloss too far over the Marine Corps, the service that you did. Were you deployed? You said you were done in 98?
96. Correct.
So what what were we doing? Was that like Desert Storm? 92?
Desert Storm was 90.
90, 92.
Yeah, 90, 91.
91,
time frame, right. So I was still in high school.
Yeah.
So by the time I went into the Marine Corps, no, there wasn't any real conflicts going on. I think Kosovo and the other ones kicked off right after that.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in stateside pretty much. I did go overseas. I did a year in Okinawa, Japan.
Mm.
Pretty interesting place.
Yeah. So it means there's stories that you cannot tell with that smile. You saw that?
It's funny because like I'll run into young Marines now or, you know, or guys that have been over there that, you know, were there like in mid-2000. I'm like, hey, where were you at? Oh, they're like, I was at Camp Hansen. That's the base I was at.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, dude, I was there too. And it's cool to catch up. I'm like, hey, is this still there? And we're talking about almost 30 years ago. Right? Yeah. It is 30 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's
crazy.
So It's fun times. It was interesting.
Yeah, I didn't want to gloss over. But right. then, but so after corrections, you get sworn, and you become law enforcement. There was something else. Oh, but you're in the Navy now. Is that recent?
Correct. No. So that's going back to around 2010.
Okay.
I still feel like I want to serve my country. So I started looking into it, and I think it was 2011 I was able to get back in. At the time, I wasn't able to go back to the Marine Corps because of my age. Mm. They're like, I think I was like 34 years old. They're like, no, you're too old. I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? There was guys in boot camp with me that were like 39.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, no, we changed the standard. You're too old now. So, I was like, wow. So so a friend of mine that he actually worked with us, he was a recruiter. So he's like, dude, come to the Navy. So I started my career with the Navy.
And how old were you when you became a police officer?
25, 26.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So 25, 26. And then you go into the Navy.
Correct.
So what's the better branch?
Oh, man. Damn. You're putting me on the spot.
Okay. You don't have to.
No, Matt, you know what I can tell you? Like, I think the Marine Corps instilled something in me because so... That's one thing I did find out. Once you go through Marine Corps boot camp, let's say you're going to do a branch transfer to go to like the Army, the Navy, or the Air Force. Guess right. what? You don't have to go to their boot camp.
Okay.
They all take the Marine Corps boot camp. It's 12 weeks of going to hell, okay. basically. Yeah. It's a nice way of putting
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like it's vice versa. Let's say you're in the Navy. You go through Navy boot camp, but now you want to transfer to the Marines. You're going to go to Marine boot camp.
Yeah.
You're in the Army. You want to go to the Marine Corps. You're going to go through Marine Corps boot camp. The only one that accepts everything is, you know, that all the branches
accepted by everything, yeah.
accepted by everything is the Marine Corps.
All right.
And it's that discipline, the teamwork. And man, I really had a lot of good, you know, I had a good time there.
All right. So
learned a lot. And one of the things I think that they instilled in us to this day is the never quit attitude. Just the Marines just keep on going. No nice. Matter how hard things are going, they pound that into your head and they, you know, they're good at playing. When we were in boot camp, they were good at playing mind games.
They try to break you.
They're going to break you down and then yeah. build you back up, but they build you back up to be a team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, to not let anything stop you. And that's why the Marine Corps has that legacy of, you know, going to battle. And yeah, you know, they've lost a lot of great men and women, but they always come out on top because of that.
You also were on a couple units that were prestige
in the department.
Yeah, in the department. One of them being the SWAT team, boot camp, SWAT school. I'm sorry, bro. I got to keep putting you in the spot. Which one would you rather not do again? Boot camp, Marine Corps boot camp, SWAT school.
Boot camp. It's okay. a lot longer.
Okay, shorten them. Can you even shorten them down? No, I don't think you can.
Yeah.
Would you say SWAT school is like a condensed...
condensed version.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a lot. It's not a walk in the park. Like, you know, you just don't show up and think, oh, I'm just going to breeze right through this. It's not.
Yeah.
It's mentally and physically demanding.
You're talking about the Marine Corps?
Or the SWAT school. You're saying going through SWAT school now? Because people think, oh, it's only 3 weeks. I'll just, you know, this is an in-service class. I'll just coast to it. I mean, you could show up with that mentality, yeah. and it's gonna break you in about a day.
Yeah,
and I'm not trying to bash anybody because I've seen a lot of great people go through the school. You know, I've been a cadre, an instructor there, and we've had some people that you were like, man, this guy's gonna make it, and by day two or day three, they're quitting. It breaks them
either mentally or physically. Because I've seen people. Like
yeah, and a part of that, so you know, we have medics on scene, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of it sometimes with the jerkiness and everything will be dehydration. So, yeah. you know, they'll pump them with an IV, get them back in there. But, you know, even with the military, and a lot of people say this and it's true, your mind will break you faster than your body will. Mm-hmm. Your body can take a lot more punishment than you think. But if you let your mind take control of it and you just start, you know, mentally destroying it, saying, oh, man, I'm in pain. I can't take this anymore. You're going to break.
Yeah.
You're going to break. But if you keep on working through it and say, no, I'm going to keep on going, keep on working through it. Yeah, I'm in pain. But so is everybody else here. Everybody's suffering.
Yeah. That's
you work through it, but yeah, I've seen people. It's mentally, it's just
that's like giving up. All right, I'm gonna do 10 reps, and when you get to 8, you're like 9. But if you said I'm gonna do 15 reps, yeah, you'll blow through 8 and 9 yeah, to get to the, and then you get to 13, like 13.
14. Yeah, but it's also more fun to go 8's tough, and then you get to 10, you go screw it, keep going.
Yeah, keep
going. I'm gonna go hit 12. Like you meant to do 10, but you're just like, I'm going to knock out 11 and 12.
Yeah. And you also got to watch out. You know, you don't want anybody getting hurt. You know, there's one thing about being mentally tough, but you don't want somebody, you know, to go into something, you know, some kind of reaction to where their body completely locks down, which we've had in the past.
I mean,
we had one guy that we took to a hospital, and that guy was pretty much, he could have died. Mm-hmm. He could have died because he was already in that route of going through heat exhaustion, was urinating blood. I mean, it was all kinds of stuff. And one of the medics caught it. One of the medics is like, hey, man, this guy's not looking good. We need to, like, scoop him up and take him to the hospital. Like, an IV or nothing's going to work on this guy. We need to get him, like, some serious care. And, yeah, sure enough.
So, speaking of mental toughness, we're going to take a short break. I want to come back. I want to talk about Iron Man.
Okay.
Okay, I mean, we can finish up the career stuff, which we can touch a little bit in there. Actually, we'll go to the Iron Man, then we'll come back to the career stuff. I want to talk about the motor unit.
Okay.
So, and then we'll come back and talk about this Iron Man stuff because I'm thinking about joining.
Right.
Yeah. I heard it's a walk in the park.
Aluminum Man.
All right, and we'll be right back.
You guys like the Jeep? If you want, you can drive one of these. We're hiring. HollywoodPolice.org. Apply today.
Are you a police officer? Do you work at a police department that is hiring? Well, guess what? This is the opportunity in a lifetime for you. You could be featured on a Donut Shop podcast commercial break, letting us know that your department is hiring. So if you're interested in recruiting on the podcast for free, go to www.donutshoppodcast.com. Go to the contact us portion of the website, and then you can submit your info there. Remember, it's for free. Let's get back to the show. And
he's doing the triathlon water. He's just splashing his face, a quick squeeze.
No, on the back.
And we're back.
All right. I'm going to leave all that to spit it out.
Yeah, do it. So we were talking about some physically, I don't know.
Demanding trials.
Yeah, of your life, including the SWAT team and including the Marine Corps boot camp. But I think you're just a sicko that likes this stuff because
the punishment.
Yeah, because you're also Iron Man guy who does all these different events. And how many have you done now?
So full Iron Man, I've done one full Iron Man, which is 140.6, so 140 miles.
Jeez.
0.6.
Okay,
almost 141. But I mean,
so then you also do the other triathlon events, which are like
the 70.3. So yeah, so I've
that's
done
it 70.
one full Ironman, and I'm working to do the next one, which will be in November in Mexico. But I've done 5 or 6 halves, which is 70.3. It's half the distance.
That's
and then a couple of sprints and what's the other one called? I can't think of the name, but it goes in halfway increments, so it's the sprint. And I can't remember the other name. And it's like the sprint is like, you know, have to swim, a 13-mile bike ride and then a 3-mile run. Then the next one is like 25 miles on the bike and 6-mile run. And then you go into the
half. So you're just building. You're building up.
Yeah.
What about an eco challenge?
What's that?
Like an eco challenge. Like one of these ones where they go down to like Costa Rica and you got to go to like coast to coast and work in like up the mountain, ultra, down the
Like an ultra.
Yeah. I mean, but it's, I don't know. My cousin did it, and it's they move base camps like.
Right. I was gonna say it's a multi-day thing.
Yeah,
right?
It was a multi-day thing. Like there was a TV show during the pandemic on Amazon, I think, that my cousin was on, and so he ran the logistics. So he was at the tents, and he was moving all the stuff to the different rally points and setting up, and then the racers would enter into camp at different times of night, and your headlamping, you know, they've done it in Florida, I think. And somebody actually got hit by a car because they're doing it
on an alley.
Yeah. They're doing it from like Cocoa to Tampa and you just had to get across the state. And you're using back roads, you're using
the woods,
whatever.
Everything, yeah.
Oh, so this is, it's not a sanctioned thing. It's not like, oh, we're going to run this route.
It's kind of just like, but there's not like a route. Like
there's
It's scout it and figure it out. Like guys will go in country first or in the area first.
Oh, okay. I
scout what they're going to do and then know like, all right, this is the terrain. Or, oh no, that's going to be a swamp if we go that way. So we got to go south a little bit and come in. It's like a, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, there's one I know.
It's super challenging.
Yeah,
there's one I know that they did a documentary on similar, but it was like in the it was either in North Carolina or Georgia, and it was something called like Bob's Race or something like that. But it's a race that's been done year after year, and it's these hardcore guys, and they're out there in the mountains running all these different trails and everything for 2 days. And you got to have your own support there, like your own person, your medical stuff, your own food. So you run up, come back down to the base camp, get whatever you need, and then go run again. And I mean, it's day and night. Like they'll start in the morning and you'll see them with the headlamps coming back at night. They get lost. Some people, you know, it's crazy.
I was impressed enough with the Ironman stuff. And now we're like, you want to go across the country? What's the route? We'll figure it out. The so the Ironman thing is, that's no joke. You look, you just before the show, you're like, hey man, I'm coming. I'm a little gassed. I was running for 2 hours. Was it 2 hours?
2 hours this morning.
2 hours this morning. I was like, gosh. You know, here I am. I'm like, we ordered a pizza if you want.
We drove over.
Yeah, we drove and got some pizza if you want.
It's a lot of dedication.
Yeah,
you have to give a lot of time to prep for it, because if not, you're going to be dying the day of the race.
Mm-hmm. And
I mean, it's not an easy thing. You just don't show up. You know, the sprints, you could work through it. The smaller races with the distances, you could kind of work through it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get into the 70.3s and the 140.6s or the full marathons, you definitely need to train, because if not, your body's going to lock up.
All right. So I signed up for the Ironman. I'm there that day. What happens?
So usually the day before, you'll leave all your stuff already set up, like your bike. You'll leave your bike there overnight, and then the next morning you come in before the race starts and you set everything up. Your running shoes, everything you're going to use for the race that day, because it's back-to-back events. So the first event is the 2.4-mile swim in the water.
So when you say back-to-back, you get timed?
Yes.
In and out?
Everything.
Stop.
No,
everything, you just can continue going, because I used to watch
continuous.
I used to watch it on TV, and you see NBC, the person like they're getting their clothes, and then they start jumping on the bike, and
so those are the transition areas. So in the morning you'll go to the transition area where you left your bike the day before, usually, and you'll set everything up, towel, you know, any snacks you're gonna take with you on the bike or on the run, your running shoes, your cycling shoes, your helmet, your, you know, sunscreen, your eye protection or sunglasses, whatever you're going to wear on the bike, whatever you're going to wear for the run, the running numbers and all that stuff. So you'll set all that up, and then you report to the beach, the lake, whatever location you're going to be at. So mine is going to be the ocean in Cozumel. So it'll be the dock. So they'll line everybody up based on, hopefully, I think they're doing it in waves, which is easier to do, where they let only a couple people out at a time.
Yeah.
So it's not mayhem.
And look it up if you want, it so you can laugh. 2011 Wisconsin Ironman. That was my first full Ironman, 140.6. And they did, instead of doing it by age groups or wave groups or whatever, they did a mass start. So I think it was 2,000 people starting all in the lake at the same time. So you can only imagine, if you look at the video, it's crazy. Oh, yeah. It's just an onslaught, because, you know, it's not like anybody's trying to hurt anybody, but you're going to get kicked,
of course.
2,000 people in the water. And when they hit the cannon, you know, that it shoots off,
boom,
everybody's going. So,
oh my God.
So, you know, getting kicked in the face, all kinds of stuff, elbows, everything's flying, because everybody's trying to, you know, get ahead and try and kind of separate themselves, because it's like that. So, this one, I think, is in waves.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll enter the water. You'll do your 2.4-mile swim. Once that clock starts, like, you have a timing chit on you. So the overall clock starts with the first person in the water. But as soon as you cross the
timing chip?
Yeah, it's a little chip with a like a Velcro, and they put it. You put it on your leg.
Like an ankle bracelet.
Yeah.
What is it called? House arrest.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
But it's a, like a little just tip smaller wrapped one, yeah. around. Yeah. And basically, the race starts. Let's say 7:30 race start. They'll say 7:30 race start, and that'll be the pros.
Yeah.
They'll go off, and the timer starts. But it won't start logging your time until you come over the first mat. Before you enter the water, there'll be a mat there, and it'll register your time.
Yeah.
So, boom. It'll say, hey, you know, Jack just started at 8 o'clock, let's say, by the time I get to my wave.
Yeah.
So I get into the water, and the time's already going. That timer doesn't stop until I finish, until I cross the finish line at 140.6.
Mm. How long you think a race, how long will it take in, like, hours?
Okay, so... I started the mass swim. I'll give you that one. 2011 Wisconsin Ironman. I started at 7 in the morning was the start. And I crossed the finish line at 8:10 at night. 13 hours of nonstop. It wasn't like, I'm going to go take a nap. No.
Yeah.
Think about this on a day like today.
Yeah.
Right now, it's what, like 2 o'clock? Yeah. I'd probably be getting off the bike or already running a couple of miles into it.
Where do you go to the bathroom?
So that's an interesting.
You ever seen Dumb and Dumber?
Yeah.
Just go, man. Yeah.
So you can go. They have porta potty set up at different stops and everything, but
number ones
usually just keep on going and just sprinkle some water.
It's lubricant.
Yeah. Have you ever been behind the guy who did number two?
No,
because
actually, one time I did see something like that. It was brutal, and unfortunately, you know, it happened. It was at the Marine Corps Marathon in Washington, D.C., and a guy came in at the end to get his medal, and he had done the number two deal.
Oh, my God.
And it stunk. And luckily, he had wrapped, like, they give you, like, these things, like these,
heat blankets.
So it looked like he was wrapped up in aluminum foil. So thank God he had that on, so you couldn't see it, but you could smell it.
You know,
and it was brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, being behind that guy.
The problem with that is, and... from my experience, and I'm pretty sure, you know, it's happened to other people, that when you have that momentum going, especially like on a run, there's a reason why they're called brick runs, because your feet feel like bricks after being on the bike so long, and now you got to run.
Yeah.
You know, the run is the last thing. So your feet are like almost like sometimes feel like cemented. And I remember the first marathon I ran, it was Miami. Yeah, I'm running along. And mile 23, I'm in the Grove over by Peacock Park. They had the porta potty set up. I'm like, man, I got to go to the bathroom real quick. And it wasn't number two. It was number one. I go, I got to go to the bathroom real quick. Let me just run in here and boom, and I'll just keep on going. Yeah. I ran right in there. And as soon as I came out, I took three steps. I was like, whoa, what's up with my legs?
Yeah.
And my legs were locking up.
Ah.
So I spent that was mile 23. I spent the next 3.5 miles to the finish line. Running, walking, hobbling. Running, walking, hobbling, and everything, because that's it.
Oh, you shut them down. Yeah, they were like, no, nope, not rebooting. Yeah.
So after that, I learned. I was like, oh, no, dude. If I got to go take number one, no problem. I'm running and dumping water and just keep on going, because the possibility of your legs locking up real quick is possible.
It makes sense why they put several reasons why they put the swim up front. One, so your legs don't lock up.
So you don't drown.
You don't drown. And two, so if you have to go to the bathroom, it's probably towards the tail end.
Yeah.
So you're not in the water behind somebody just
slurping.
Just take it in.
Yeah.
We do the torch run every year.
Right.
Like, and so
Olympics.
Yeah. Broward used to do county line to county line. Right. So we'd do right there on like Sunny Isles Beach start, like by Hallandale. Right. And we'd run all the way up to the Hillsborough Beach.
Right.
In Boca.
Yeah.
And so one of my lieutenants is a big runner and stuff. And so the one year he said, I'm going to do the full thing. And the one thing for anybody that runs, it's tough, is they were running at like a 11 to 12 minute mile pace.
Right.
And that's a killer hard pace to run, because it's slow.
Slow.
Yeah. These guys want to run faster and their bodies are tuned faster. So to jog like we're doing, is tough for him. So like, our team, we knew that every other person had to bring him out his bag of oranges, his bag of potatoes, his squirt goo, all the nutrients that he needed to refuel his body. But yeah, when we go to eat at like Duffy's after, him sitting just on the command vehicle, like for us to park after, cause we drive the command vehicle with it. We had to almost like carry him like a little baby, because he was just like, I yeah. can't move it's, any body part, much. Like yeah. no body part, because it was 31 miles is that torch run.
31
right. and at an 11 and 12 minute pace, yeah. if he's a good runner, like mm-hmm. you were saying, yeah, yeah that's brutal yeah. because you're going to, he would probably be doing like an 8 minute pace, 8:30, yeah, normally. 9. Yeah. So it's just like, it's almost like a walk for us.
Yeah. I was with him and we got kind of like scolded by the bike guys. And cause first off it's led by like BSO's bear. So yeah. it's a big diesel truck and you're sitting there
eating all the fumes,
oh, yeah, yeah.
eating diesel fumes. Like, thanks guys. So in Pompano, it kind of squiggles on A1A. And so him and I sort of like got in front and we were just nice. Like yeah. we're jogging. We probably boosted the speed. And so yeah. we sent the bicycle guys up front.
Hey, you gotta slow
down. You guys gotta get behind the truck. Gotta get behind the truck, you're not protected, and yeah. we're like, yeah,
we're
well,
dropping people. You're yeah. dropping yeah. people.
You're gonna kill us, yeah. breathing in all the fumes.
So
yeah.
The I think we were at the cause
swim.
I'm still, yeah, because I'm like swim. I'm like walk me through.
It's a long day.
So yeah, because I've never been, so yeah. I need to know what I'm getting ready for.
So finish the 2.4 mile swim.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the water you go.
So wait, so you go in the heat or in the wave or whatever it is, right. and then boom, you jump in. 2 point whatever
4 mile swim 2.4. And it could be a square, like in Wisconsin it was a big freaking square around the yeah. around the lake, and you swam it twice. This one's point to point, so you go in on one part of the ocean along the shoreline and then you swim to another point and out you go.
Yeah.
So it just depends on which race it is, you know, they all have different styles. Some will be like a triangle going out and then coming back in.
Mm-hmm.
Panama City has it to where it's the pier, you go out around the pier, come out of the water, run around some cones, go back in and do it over again.
Oh, so you're doing like so, a little lap.
Yeah, like a lap around the whole pier.
Yeah.
So, and I just did that one, but I did the half. So you get out and then you go into what's called T1, transition one. So transition one is now where all the bikes and yeah. all your gear is racked up.
Yeah.
So now you're getting ready to go into the bike. So you try and dry off real quick.
Typically close to the water.
Yeah, you could say that. I mean,
yes or no? Like when you get out, you're like, oh, over there in the parking lot by the pier, that's where
right.
the transition
pier. Yeah, they'll have it in a parking lot or okay, somewhere okay. close by. I mean, it's not like you're running a mile to get there. But,
yeah.
It just depends on the race. I've heard of one that they did that, I think it was in Utah or Arizona, where they had to get bussed from the end of the swim to the transition area. Oh. So it was one of those, just wow. logistically, the way they set it up, I guess it had to be that way.
Yeah.
So
and you're still on the clock. Get out
yeah,
of the
yeah.
water.
Yeah, no, still, the still clock's going. So
it's like a pit.
Yeah, yeah.
And you go.
You got to go. So, yeah. you know, you can't be hanging out like I did on the last one that I was in there for like 6 minutes. Like you want to be able to go in and out like 2 to 3 minutes tops.
Yeah.
I mean, you could hang out there, but the time's still going. Yeah, and yeah. each minute counts.
Yeah.
And you see that at the end. So try and dry off real quick. Start throwing on your jersey, your helmet, your sunglasses, put on sunblock if you want. Grab the bike, and you could either have the shoes clipped in to the bike, or you could put the shoes on. So it just depends on your preference. And then you're pretty much running with the bike next to you to get to the mounting point. So the mounting point will be right at the end of the transition area, because they don't want people riding throughout
yeah.
while everybody's getting changed and, you know,
yeah.
crash into each other. So you get to the... to transition one, the end of it, and then it'll say mount here. They'll stop you. Hey, you got to get on. Boom, you get on the bike, and then you go, and that's where all the fun starts. Not that you haven't been having fun in the water, but now yeah. Now you're cycling,
yeah.
and now you're dealing with headwinds,
yeah.
Sun. The sun is just brutal. It depends on where you're at. But
Tour de France the other day, people taking selfies in front of the pack. Some guy taking a selfie,
yeah. running
clipped,
along, yeah.
and clipped a freak guy. Like leans out to get a selfie,
boom,
yeah. and one his arm freaking hits a cyclist, yeah. and then it caused a massive pile.
Oh, I think I saw that.
Yeah,
yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Just the other day.
So yeah, you're going out there, and you know you do whether it's two loops, three loops, whatever they call it, to get the 112 miles in on the bike.
What's not good etiquette out there? Like I would hate to do something. And they're like, come on, guy, you should know better. You know, there's like something that people have, like there's etiquette of everything. So like
you get penalized for certain things. Like, let's say somebody's in front of you on the bike.
Yeah.
You can't call. You can't get behind them and stay on them. Like what they
draft.
It's called drafting.
Yeah.
Right. So they're eating all the wind or whatever. Yeah. You're like, hey, I can keep this up.
Yeah.
So if I remember right, it's either 5 or 10 seconds. You have to be able to pass them. If not, you get penalized and they'll put you in the penalty box. They'll, like, you know, check your number off. And then when you come up to a tent, which is like the penalty zone, they'll tell you, hey, pull off, and you got to sit there for 5 minutes. So,
oh, shit.
You know, so that's one of the things, or people trying to cut in front of each other, or just, you know, just doing craziness.
So if you can't pass them,
then you have to fall back. You can't be on their wheel.
Okay, I got
it. So meaning the guy, guy or girl is in front of you,
yeah,
and they're at a good pace, and you catch up to them, but you can't accelerate to pass them.
Yeah.
Then you have to fall back and keep that gap open. They don't want you like this.
Yeah.
Going right behind them because the person in front of you is doing all the pulling.
Yeah.
You know, anybody could stay back there and do the whole 112 miles with this person pulling you along.
All right.
So that's one of the things they look for, because they have referees on motorcycles, you know, just riding around and marking people off. And it's happened. It's happened before. It's even happened to pros, to where they've gone behind, and if they didn't move fast enough, they penalized them. And we're talking about, you know, world-class athletes. And I'm like, wow, you know. I don't think they were drafted, the referee saw it that way. They're like, hey, 5 minutes. So it kills them.
Yeah, that's bad.
Especially at that level that they're very competitive, you know, that'll kill them.
Yeah, but if they're there, they should know better. Like, okay, again.
Yeah.
But, okay, so now you're not on anybody's butt, you finish that portion of that leg. It's called a leg, or what is it called?
Yeah, or you could call it a leg.
That event,
event. Yeah. However you want to call it.
Okay, I mean, that's me.
The bike.
Yeah, the bike. You're done with the bike.
You're done with the bike, because remember, swim, bike, run. So
you get off, throw it down?
No.
No.
So you get back to, now you're transition to, now you're going to transition to running. Get your transition, you have to get off the bike and run it or walk it, however you want, back to the rack. You rack your bike. Now you take off everything that you went cycling with. You know, usually you'll leave like the jersey top on, kind of unzip it to get some air going.
Yeah.
And then throw off the shoes, throw off the helmet, keep the sunglasses, throw on a cap, throw on your, what they call the bib number, which is your number, and your running shoes and socks. And here we go. Out of transition two, and now's when the fun really begins.
Oh, so you're changing your tires, you're changing the shoes. So bike shoes different, obviously different than the...
Correct, because the bike shoes, I would say 90% of the people, you know, are using clip-ins.
Yeah.
So you're not going to run in clip-ins.
Yeah.
You can. I mean, I don't know how far you're going to get. But...
Clip-ins for the audience, I was like, what's a clip-in? The thin little shoe that goes into the
pedals. Right. Yeah. Okay. No, well, it's underneath. On the bottom. Yeah, it's on the bottom. So the pedal has an opening.
Yeah.
And the bottom of the shoe has like a little attachment, and you clip that in. So you...
It'd be like trying to run in baseball cleats.
Yeah. Something like that. But almost like with like a square box or...
Yeah, like there's some kind of, you know, male-female part that just...
Right.
And it clips in. What happens if you fall? Your feet stay in there, or is there an easy breakaway?
Yeah, if you don't move your feet to the side, the way you got to kick it out.
They're usually a twist.
Yeah,
is that what happened to our president?
I don't know about that one. I saw when he fell off the bike.
What happened with him is when the brain doesn't fire properly and tell you to take your foot off of the pedal.
All right. So, I didn't know. I think because
neurons on a bike. In the brain.
Yeah, no. If you don't unclip and you come to a really slow stop and you're not balanced,
you're going down with the bike. Okay.
Down you go.
Boom. Now you're starting to run.
So now, like I said, now it's when it really gets interesting, because you could be a great swimmer, and I'm not talking about the pros, because the pros are just, they're monsters. They're at another level. I mean, I tip my hat off to them. They're beast. Mm-hmm. You know, they're swimming like if a shark was chasing them. They're flying.
Yeah.
They get out of that, they're running like full sprint to transition one, jumping on the bike, and on the bike, they're cranking it out, man. They got to be close to 27, 28, 29, 30 miles an hour. They're like the whole time it's just at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And then on the run, like... Some of the champions that I've seen, like, what's this guy's name? Can't remember his first name. His last name's Craig. He was an Australian, and he won 3 Ironmans. David Craig, I think it's David Craig.
Justin's on it.
Justin,
he's on it.
But he won, I want to say, 2 or 3 Ironman in Kona, which is like the championships of Ironman.
Craig Alexander, born in 1973, Australian triathlete. He won in 2008, 9, and 11.
Yeah. A beast.
Yeah.
And that guy, I want to say when I looked him up, you know, he was running, I want to say, like a 6-minute pace on the marathon.
Yeah.
After you've ridden 112 miles and swam like
yeah.
a beast.
Yeah.
He was running a 6-minute mile. Wonder... So think about that. A 6-minute mile for 26 miles at the end of, you know.
Do you think race. That can be done by anybody if they train, or you need to be special breed?
No, I think if you train up to it, but they're.
I'm not saying their... to complete. I think you train yeah. and you'll be able, you know, you train really hard, and it's not, I'm not minimizing anything, but to perform at that level.
It's all about training. But those guys and girls put in, you know, 6-7 hours, whatever it is. It's not like
I don't think I'll ever be able to dunk a basketball. I can work on my shot, yeah. be really good at shooting, but not dunk.
Right.
But you need something special about you to be in that category. And I'll say I'm never going to dunk because I've touched the rim a couple times.
I think, touched it. You know, yeah.
I don't think it was 10 feet, but...
You know, in looking at a lot of them, like Craig Alexander and one of the other guys, Chris McCormick, which I think is the one that won in 2010, they were friends, but they were doing races since they were like in their teens.
Okay.
So like they were already, I think they had already turned pro like in 1994 or something like that. So it was already, you know, a passion that was engraved in them, kind of like Lance Armstrong.
Yeah.
When you look at Lance Armstrong just didn't show up to the Tour of France. Yeah. He had all the issues with the races and the whole doping scandal and everything, but it doesn't matter. I mean, you still got to be at a certain level to get to that level of being a pro, you know, and he was already riding, I think at 15 or 16, he started with running and then he transitioned to riding. So he was doing that, you know, 20 years, let's say, until he got to the Tour de France or whatever age he was when he got there.
So not to, and we're getting to the end of the race stuff. So we're running, get there, and then that's it. After that, it's like, do you know? Because I would assume it's a huge course, 146 point something miles.
140.6.
Yeah, 140.6 miles is a lot of miles. Do you ride the race before, or are you just like cone? I have to follow that cone, or
So they have everything mapped out for you.
Yeah.
You know, and before.
But do you go and check it out?
No, I look it up. They'll have it on the website. Yeah. And, you know, some have like virtual tours of it where you could see it. Some people have done it before, so they'll tell you, hey, look out for this or that. But then the day of the race, everything's marked out for you. Mm-hmm. You know, so you don't go, you don't make a right and another 10 miles down the road. Oh. And they're like, hey, you got to come back over here.
Yeah, well, what I'm getting to, since we're getting towards the end of the process, when you get to mile 10, is it like 10 more miles left? Is it like a highway where it's like next exit 10, like 10 more miles left, 5 more miles, like, you know, or is you just supposed to know?
So with the runs, and that's on all the races, at least that I can remember on the 70.3 and the 140, for sure. I can't remember on the sprint and the other ones, but I want it. They're all marked. So it'll say mile one, mile two.
Oh.
And where the mind game starts on the runs is when you're ready. And like you run by one of the cones and it'll say it on both sides and you're running and you know, man, I got to run 26 miles and you're running and you're like, oh, there's mile 12 over here.
Yeah.
So somehow I'm going to get back to here. And
Okay.
You see everything. Everything's marked out for you. Yeah. You're going to see it.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was trying to ask.
Especially like the Panama City one that I was telling you about, with the jellyfish.
What happened there?
So I just did.
That's his favorite animal species.
Aquatical species.
Aquatical. So, mid May, I want to say, I can't remember exactly, 17th, 18th, or something like that. I did a 70.3, which was by Ironman 70.3 Gulf Coast, and it was in Panama City Beach, Florida. Mm-hmm. Never been up there. Interesting way to get up there.
Yeah.
There's not even a main highway to get right into it. You got to take the I-10 or I-4 or whatever it was, you get off
an hour
and then you got to cut like an hour through all these back towns.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Yeah. You never been up there?
No. I've only been
really
to
nice beach, yeah. Really nice beach.
Nice
town.
People. Yeah. Beach
but
town
the,
and everything.
That hour drive, you're like, ooh. Ooh.
Yeah.
You see.
So you've been up there, Nick?
Of course. I've been a couple of times. As you're driving and then you break into
really,
the beach town. It's really nice. Beautiful
really
beaches.
Small towns. Yes. I mean, the people I stopped there, people very nice through the small towns, but you're like, wow. Where are we? Like, it's not a lot. It's really small.
I've been to Dafuniak Springs.
They have just to tell in that hour drive, you're going through these towns, and there's an officer that sits, and the town is like two blocks, and they'll run radar because it's like 60, and then it drops down to 30 just for those two blocks, and then goes back up to 60, and they're just tagging milking people. Bing! You're going 30 over.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Sorry.
But
that's an actual speed trap.
Yeah.
I mean, it's their town. I don't know. Slow down.
Yeah. You don't want to pay that ticket.
Yeah.
So I went up there, and it was an interesting race. Hadn't done it before. I had always wanted to do it. I actually wanted to do the full there, but I'm like, let me get into the half because I hadn't trained up for a full. So there, the race is in the water, in the ocean, but it wasn't by the pier that I had told you guys about where you do the pier, come out, and get back in and do it again. Yeah. No, it was a little bit further south from the pier. And it was basically a square. So they would have these huge buoys. Like, you're asking, how do you know where you're going?
Well, yeah.
You're following all the people in front of you.
Yeah.
So they had all the buoys set up. And usually the big yellow ones, I think it was the yellow ones, are the ones where you turn at. Or the red ones, vice versa.
Whatever, it's a different color.
You turn and you just come back around. So I'm like, oh, this is not going to be too bad. You know, the weather, you know, is nice. The water temperature is going to be nice.
Yeah.
And I go towards the end. I'm in one of the last waves. They were doing like 10 people at a time in the water. I go in the last wave, close to the back waves, and I jump in, and I'm starting to swim. And then the swells of the water just going up and down. I'm like, okay, I thought it was going to be a little flatter than this, but whatever. Yeah. So there was a couple of times that, you know, on taking breaths, I took water in the mouth because a swell just happened to come and catch me right as I'm like taking a breath. But I was telling Nick that while I'm
doing my strength, I had asked him about the mindset. This is off camera. I asked him about, hey, you gotta have like a serious mindset to be. I'm about to go run 140 miles or complete 140 miles. There's a certain time in like it's called the runner's mindset, runner's high, where you just check out and you're just on autopilot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I asked him about that mindset, and he's like, yeah, no, you definitely gotta have it. And then he broke into this story about the
jellyfish.
Yeah.
So what happens is, you know, I took a couple gulps of water to start the nice fresh morning with.
Yeah.
And man, like crystal clear. So I'm swimming and I feel these things hitting me in the face. So I'm thinking I had seen like a group of like a fish, but smaller ones, like feeder fish.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking, oh, they're just, you know, tapping me on the cheek, on the neck and everything. I don't think nothing of it. Cause at one point my goggles fogged up a little bit. So I'm just, man, I'm like, man, this is starting to itch. Like this is really getting annoying. I don't think nothing of it. I'm just like, I'm in my zone. I'm like, I got to get out of this water. I got to go to transition one, get on that bike and hammer it out. Because to me, I'm not a great swimmer. I know how to swim and I could hold my own, but I'm not going at some of the speeds that the girls and guys are going. I mean, there's some people that swam professionally, collegiate and everything. So they're smoking it. To me, I'm like, okay, I'll catch a lot of these people when I get on the bike. That's my strong point. So I don't think nothing of it. Still getting tapped in the face. I'm like, whatever. I get out of the water. And as I'm going into transition one, my wife was there. And I'm like, I'm taking off my wetsuit and everything, trying to peel it off. I'm like, man, like that swim wasn't a joke. I was like, I kept on, you know, I kept on getting
bright red all over.
I'm like, I kept on getting nibbled by the fish. She goes, you weren't getting nibbled by the fish, babe. She goes, those were jellyfish things. They pulled out like 30 people from the water. That they just stopped and gave up, like, or they got hit pretty good because some people weren't wearing wetsuits. So they got shocked a bunch of times or, you know, and you're saying, ooh. So I had a burn mark right across my neck.
Oh.
I had one right here on my cheek. Like I had marks all over. It looked like a couple welts, like Nick's saying.
Yeah, I've never been stung. Have you ever been stung by a jellyfish?
No.
That's why it's your favorite aquarium.
Yeah, because I like
stung.
It.
Until you get stung, yeah.
Yeah, I've never been stung, living in Florida all my life. And I see the man of wars, as they're called on the beach. They look like little bubbles of jelly. And I'm
with tentacles.
Like, yeah, my
and what happens is when they sting you, that if they sting you good enough, like what happened to me, it stays stuck to you. you. It's like a nice big burn mark on you.
And so you felt that. That was in the beginning of the race.
The
entire time you're just burning.
Burning.
But he's lucky because later when he has to pee, he can just bottle it and then pour it all over his neck.
That's what Nick had said.
I said. So I'm like, did you pee on your face or what?
Because just aim up.
I just put it out of my mind, man. Yeah. Just kept on going, jumped on the bike and went with it. And the bike on that one was just one big loop. It just went out all the way to nowhere and came back into the city.
Yeah.
But now the run, where you were talking about the run, you're just running along. Yeah. That's where you really see the suffering.
Yeah.
Because, there's some good people that are good on bikes. And, I mean, there's people that, the pros, and then there's people that train all the time. So they're going to be good at all three.
Yeah.
But then you'll see people that probably passed you on the swim.
Yeah.
Maybe you didn't catch them on the bike. But now it's time to start passing up people on the run, because by now everybody's spent.
Yeah.
And then the later it gets, it'll start at 7, but by now, let's say you even did a 2.5 hour bike ride, it's coming up on noontime. So now the sun's creeping out nice.
So
now you got the sun cooking you.
Yeah.
And that race, they broke it down into 3 laps to do the 12 miles, the 13.1. So they broke down the 13 miles and you had to do 3 loops of that.
Yeah. Which is just that's a half marathon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a half.
It's in its own.
Most people they train just for a half marathon in their life. They're doing it as the third fun event of the day.
Yeah. And going back to what you were saying, Nick, I'm sorry. Yeah. But that's where you see that you're like, oh man, I hate this.
Yeah.
Because you'll start mile one, but then mile one's here and then you're running and you see mile 9. So that means that'll be your third lap is where you're going to hit mile 9 there. Then you hit mile 5 and you see mile like 12. So you're like, this is where I'm at.
So it's easier, obviously, to run that point to point than to keep going in loops. And you're like, I got to do this 3 more times.
When you think about it, laps are usually a little more annoying. Like when you're in PE and you're like, I got to do 4 of these to get the mile. Versus if you could just look straight down the street and go, that blurry thing down there is my goal.
Yeah.
It's getting closer. Yeah, it's getting closer. It's getting closer.
For sure. When I was my best time running, it came on the track or whatever, but it was my method was when I hit the round part of the track, I would just sprint. And then the straightaways, I would be at a long stride jogging and sprint. Right. And then I was doing that. I forget what I hit, but it was
6-minute mile probably.
No, it was under that. It was 5-something. It was like 5:29 or something like that. I promise you, bro. It was in college. I was a freshman and I was like, full of testosterone and I was like 90 pounds. Like now, I don't know about that. So I had a question because I have ran and I tried to get into biking, bicycling.
Cycling,
sorry.
He loves bicycling. He tries bicycling. To get me. Bicycling. I try to get into bicycling.
I don't even know if that's actually a word.
You see, and you kind of, but he's.
No, I caught him because he does it all the time.
But you may have answered my question without even me asking it. It's like such a tell. Here you go. And I'm going to tell you why. Because I tried out, I didn't try out. I went to bike school and I did the bike school. And the bike school at my department is pretty intense. And we ride, all the way down to Black Point Marina, which is, I don't know, like 50 miles away or whatever. Long story short, it's you need to know how to, you need to be able to ride a bike and at a good pace. So for that, I was like, I need to practice a little bit for this leading up to it. Now, I always ran. And I got on my bike and, I had my kid's seat in the back and it's a Walmart mountain bike. But I wanted to see if I stay with this biking, I would get
cycling.
I'll get it. If I stay with this, I'm going to invest and get a good bike. Right. But while I was out on my Walmart bike, head down, cruising, pushing myself, you had the real cyclist, right?
Yeah.
Coming up on the side of me and they were pissed. And it wasn't in a race. I'm in my neighborhood. It's just that they're riding at the same time. And they're like, come on. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Because I'm doing it. And I'm doing good speed. But they're like, come on.
Yeah.
Now flip it. If I'm running, runners don't look at my running shoes. They're like, keep going. They're giving me the thumbs up. So who are the bigger asses? Is it the runners or is it the cyclists?
So
pretentious.
I have both. I do both, but where I have seen a lot more disagreements or, comments being made, I'm like, hey, man, we're all here. Everybody's here working out or doing whatever, enjoying a run or a bike. I don't think we need to say comments to each other or whatever, or even at vehicles, like, and I've seen it with the cyclists.
The cyclists, yeah. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's
you're just confirming whatever.
So yesterday I did one of my longer rides to prepare for Mexico.
Yeah.
And 63 miles. Okay. Basically started in Pembroke Pines, rode all the way up to State Road 84, right by Markham
Park. Oh, God.
Rode by Markham Park. God,
these guys. These guys.
Yeah.
Come over the bridge and boom, right into his neck of the woods. Right all the way around Sawgrass.
Yeah.
And rode all the way down around Sawgrass, came back down, Flamingo, cut around State Road 84, did that once, back to the Weston Library, come back around and finish that State Road 84. While we were coming onto State Road 84 one of the times, there was another group, because now we're coming through out through the residential, one of the, like, the residential areas that has like a little ramp that comes out onto that side road by 595.
Probably Indian Trace.
Oh, no.
Oh, the side road. Like, the side road.
Is it
right there by the spaghetti intersection? Or
no, you know, when you go over the bridge right by, okay, you're at Markham Park and you leave and you go over that little bridge that goes over 75 and all that, and then it dumps you down and get to the light where I think that's Flamingo or whatever.
136.
That side road at one point merges. It has a merge
from
a residential. Shotgun road that comes up.
I'm still learning all the roads because I'm not too familiar with Weston. Yeah. So we're coming down Shotgun.
Well, you better be familiar to them boys out there on the bike.
I just follow the guys in front of me. So we're at a good pace, man. We're doing 27, 28 miles an hour. They're cranking it out. So we come down Shotgun Road, and now we're merging. And then one of the groups is coming over the bridge. But you got already, man, there's already 40 of us that are up here. Three other guys pick it up and pass us. Then the rest of the group starts getting caught next to our group, but we're going to make that left on 136 to now go up into Sunrise.
Yeah.
We've been riding for a while, you know? And one of the guys from that group's like, hey, you guys are a bunch of idiots, and just starts going off. I'm like, hey, man, like, dude, like, we're all here to share the road. Like, it's like, for what? You know? And the comments go back and bloods
over here, bro.
Yeah, like, the sons of anarchy.
Comments go back and forth. I'm like, hey, man, there's no need for that. Like,
and that's one of the most dangerous spots. That's where that one girl got killed.
She died
because somebody's coming down in the sun. It was just that time of year where the sun was directly over. And I mean, that was her excuse. She might have been texting, but the sun was hitting her.
Is that the one that was that hit, I think, three cyclists?
And one of them got killed. One got killed. Yeah, why the bike's there.
Yeah.
But yeah, because I work out.
That's why that bike's there.
Yeah, because the girl died. I work out on Indian Trace in 84 right there. Yeah. So that's like those guys are going like, if I work out in the morning at like 5, I see all the blinking lights. Yeah. So the car, they're going west on 84 out into towards the Everglades.
And then loop around,
if they come back, bro, and they take up a whole freaking lane. And all I'm picturing is that Ole and Dane video. Ole and Dane video on the 2-lane road where the guy's like,
the problem is, and I'm not trying to justify one or the other. The thing is, if you take the shoulder, there's a bunch of
debris.
Yeah. It's uneven. That's why we take
my friend almost died because of an alligator. My friend's buddy who rides like that.
Yeah.
There was a freaking gator that had gotten run over, and it was just in the bike lane and they're just going.
Well, over there, it's a shoulder. It's not even technically a bike lane. It's just the shoulder, the breakdown shoulder. And then you got the two lanes. So we'll ride in the right lane, you know, and everybody, they try and check each other. I mean, they'll say, hey, keep it together, you know, car coming up so that the car passes.
Yeah.
You know, but I've seen quite a few disagreements. We'll leave it at that.
People get impatient, you know. And
if you want to see them road hogs any Sunday morning or Saturday morning, they're out there, and them road hogs out there.
Weston Road and State Road 84 by Markham Park. It is just like, put all your windows down, listen for people, and just sit there and do this because you got cyclists and then you got mountain bikers that are coming up over berms and stuff.
Yeah.
They're just shooting out of everywhere.
Police officer, bicyclist, you're public enemy number one there. No, but you know, share the road. We're share the road. But I just had a feeling because when I was on my Walmart Huffy. He looked at me with such disgust.
Yeah.
The only other time somebody looked at me with such disgust is when I was I'm a non-boater. I don't own a boat, but I rented one, and coming head on to them, they saw me in a boat. So boating etiquette is you throw a little wave, And the guy and the girl threw a little wave to me and my family. It was just me and my family. Yeah. And they saw Sally's boat rental on the side as we were crossing. They're like, ugh. They immediately took it back. So they didn't like me then. Ooh, so those two times, I was like, man, that was kind of messed up.
Felt like the lesser person.
All right. Well, that was a good little portion on the Iron Man stuff. And yes, the great debate of who's bigger a-holes. It goes to the cyclist. All right, but
some is... It's not as
don't
bad.
Don't testify
think,
it.
No, I don't think it's as bad in Broward. Yeah, I've seen some stuff there. But where it really got really bad is Rickenbacker Causeway, Key Biscayne. Like, there, I've had issues with those guys just riding, man, because they come in a mob, and it's like they just take three lanes. And I'm like, hey, man, you want to crash into me? No problem. We're both going to go down because I'm going to leap off my bike and jump onto you, and we're both going to take a ride.
Bulldog.
Because there's no reason for it. Like, you could pass, man. If I'm pretty much riding the bike lane, which is almost into the grass.
Yeah.
And you're coming with a mob and you're going to push right into me knowing that they don't ride the bike lane. They ride the road. Yeah. They ride the right lane.
Yeah.
Like, there's no need for it. So that group is they've been getting stopped lately too.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Do you think, how long have you been doing the bike stuff?
The cycling?
Yeah. I can't, it's bicycling.
On and off since 2010, and I've ridden out there, and there's a lot of good people, man.
Would you say since COVID that it is increased because everyone started going out?
A lot of people went out, but then, you know, there was people that probably continued with it, and then there's people that just stopped. It's kind of like...
Like January gyms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the whole thing. I don't know if you guys saw that, but when COVID happened, a lot of people took in animals, you know, dogs, cats, or whatever, and the freaking the shelters were empty.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Now they're overpopulated because now COVID's gone. Everybody's like, okay, here, have your dog back.
Yeah, I gotta go back to work. Who can't watch the animal?
Same thing with Peloton's going for sale.
That's true. Peloton was huge.
Peloton's.
All right. We're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the units you've been in, and then let's get that message out.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
All right. We'll be right back. Real quick, wanted to talk to you about Battle Warrior Coffee. I know the owners personally. They're fellow law enforcement officers. I told them that I would shout them out. I've had their coffee. It is delicious. So it's a veteran-owned, law enforcement-operated company originated out of Miami, Florida. It started by three Army veterans turned police officers who say coffee got them through many difficult times through their career and still does today. Their goal is to get every warrior to overcome their personal battles one cup of coffee at a time. Visit their website at battlewarriorcoffee.com or follow them on IG at Battle Warrior Coffee. Again, at Battle Warrior Coffee. Use the code DONUT and get 15% off your first order, or you can visit them at fedsapparel.com. They're under veteran-owned companies and Leo-owned companies. There's also a discount code there for 15% off by using DONUT. DONUT gets you 15% off. Just put DONUT everywhere you go and you get 15% off of this coffee. All right, let's get back to the show. And we're back. Got him. All right. So we talked about the Iron Man stuff, and that was we could do a whole podcast on that alone. So the other thing is you still are a police officer. You were in several different units. We talked about SWAT, and then you did a stint in motors, right?
You could say a stint. About 9 years.
9 years. 9 years.
What's half my career?
There you go. Wouldn't that be a stint? Did I say that wrong?
Stint?
Yeah. Is it a stint?
I feel like a stint may be a shorter stint. Like 5 years or less.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you did, well, with that, well, then correct me with, give me the proper.
I don't even know if, I would just say
you, did
you were
time.
A motorman. Yeah. Like,
I did a career.
I did some tenure.
You had some tenure in motors.
Yeah.
So how was that?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Had a great time there.
Favorite unit compared SWAT or motors? Wow.
You just want to keep on putting me on the spot.
You know, because motorman would be like motors is the best unit no matter what.
Yeah.
And SWAT would be like SWAT's the best unit no matter what.
You're either SWAT or you're not. Yeah. Motors for life.
What is it? What is it?
Oh, man. I can't because the thing is, I was in both of them at the same time because at that time there wasn't a full-time SWAT team.
Yeah.
So my primary function was motors.
Yeah.
But we got called out to call outs, to barricaded subjects, to do warrants, training and everything. So it was like mixed in always.
Mm. Is there is there a thing about sitting on a motorman's bike if you're not a motorman?
Or putting on his helmet.
And taking pictures?
Yeah. We've had some funny ones.
You didn't know about that?
What did you do?
It's not what I did. It's what I didn't know what I was doing. And the little evil joke that they have behind scenes where they're like, and it was actually Delamico. He's like, yeah. Hey, go ahead, sit on my bike. Yeah.
Put on my helmet.
Yeah, exactly. You want to put on my helmet? I'm like, no, I'm good. I'll just sit on your bike. And it's like, I'm on Meet. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, here, man, let me take you a picture. Yeah. It takes the picture. I'm taking like a big smile. I even posted the picture.
It was somebody else's motor.
Yeah, and you don't do that. It's something you don't do.
It's like, that's my horse. My horse knows me.
It's just like, they look at it as like you just sat on their lap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You sat on their lap?
Yeah, it's pretty much that.
It got to the
my butt.
Yeah. You know, it's like, come, sit, you know? And you don't know it, and you're just like, beep, beep, beep. And they're just like.
To the point that I think even back in the days when I was there, like people would get like hurt, like butt hurt. If you use their motor and not a spare, like how dare you ride my assigned motor? Like that's mine.
And it's
how I feel about my MacBook Pro.
You know,
you logged into my MacBook Pro.
No, I'm just kidding.
You know, when you have, there's like that unicorn, that fish that, you know, I would love to catch that fish. Well, to catch the fish is to get a SWAT member who's not a part of motors to sit on the motor, right?
Yeah.
And you take the picture. So you had a little, the best of both worlds, which wasn't fair. But anyway, so you were in motors. So right. So you're not going to make the call, SWAT and motors. Okay,
so much time in both of them. I mean, I did more time in SWAT. I think I ended up, before I got promoted to commander, I did 17, 18 years in SWAT. So it was...
Yeah.
It was a long ride, and you know, in motors, I had done my tenure there as an officer, and then I came back to become the commanding officer of the unit. And then at SWAT, when I left, I was one of the commanding officers there as well. So it's hard, and man, there's great guys and girls in both units.
You know?
In SWAT right now, we don't have any female operators, but in motors, we've had, I think, a total of three throughout the years. So you know, it's a good mixture. Had a great time, and it just. It's one of those things that I had so much fun that I didn't want to leave either or.
Yeah. It's just a next step in the career evolution. So, excuse me, in motors, would you say like it was your passion, or what, were you a SWAT guy or were you a motorman? And what I mean by that is like the motor guys, they're just two different elements, or are you just like a hybrid of both? Like it's one SWAT dudes, I imagine, you know, working out and going to the gun range and stuff. And, and then you got the motormen that are like, you know, they hang out after work and very, very tight knit. Not saying the SWAT guys aren't tight, but they're super tight. I know motormen are really tight where they go on their personal, motorcycles and they go on like road trips to North Carolina and they drive through the mountains and things like that. See how he's smiling. He's like,
because I did that too.
Yeah.
You know? And when I came on to the motor unit, so first I was in SWAT.
Yeah.
I got on the SWAT team, like, within 2 years on the department. And then probably 2 years after that is when I became a motor officer. There was a lot of great, you know, friendships and, you know, people I still talk to that are retired from both SWAT and motors. And at that time that I went to motors, one of my mentors, Bill, was, you know, he was in motors and SWAT.
Yeah.
Another guy, motors and SWAT. Oh, and so then like one of the guys that went through SWAT school with me, Mike, he was a motorman and then went through SWAT. So it's like there was at one point, there was four of us. But even before that, at one point, there was six guys that were both motors and SWAT.
Mm.
So it was one of those things, you know.
And I know when I think you were at the time, and this is why one of the reasons why you're here. But at the time you were doing a DUI, that DUI checkpoint, and another guy interviewed you. But you were commander at that time?
I was the lieutenant of the motor unit.
Well, the lieutenant, the commanding officer of that unit. And then there's a vlog on YouTube, and then this is where I first learned about this. And there's a little more passion. There was a little more passion And not that you weren't passionate before, but there was another driving force as to why you were doing things that you were doing out there. For instance, that one was a DUI checkpoint.
Yeah, it was a checkpoint in Little Havana.
And then you told the story how your sister was killed by a DUI crash.
Correct.
That happened. Somebody who was drinking and driving crashed into her vehicle, and she passed away. So today we wanted to just kind of rehash that story. I know it's a tough one to tell, but there's a reason, because turns out that the person who killed her is a fugitive. Correct. Running from the law still to this day. And that was 17 years ago. Yeah. So I don't know if you want to walk us through from sure. from the get, just kind of so the audience, this audience, fresh set of eyes and ears, can kind of understand what
visualize it.
Yeah, what was happening.
So probably at the time I had been in motors maybe 2 to 3 years. So I was a rookie motor officer. It was August 12, 2006. I had finished working an off-duty job late, probably head home around 4:40 in the mornings when I got home. Don't think nothing of it. And I'll get to that, why I didn't think much of it at that point. Get home, go to sleep.
You said you didn't think anything of what?
Of something I had passed by.
I was going to say,
literally you drove a couple minutes, because yeah. I'll talk about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I just wanted, because you're like, yeah. I didn't think anything. And I know where you were going with yeah. this, so I just want to.
So go home, lay down, had to get a couple hours of sleep because I had to go back to work. It was on a Saturday, to work motors. We were doing some escorts that day. And I get a knock around probably 7 o'clock in the morning. And it's two uniformed officers from a different police department. At the time I was living at my mom's house. So they knock on the door and they're like, are you the owner of a Mazda B2200? I'm like, yeah, that's me. Why, what's up? And they're like, do you know Gloria Hall? And that's my sister's name. So I'm like, okay, yeah, that's my sister. Why? And they're like, she was involved in an accident. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, and I'm looking at them with this bewildered face. Like they,
yeah.
I guess they didn't know how to come out and say it, because prior to that, once they started with the questions, my marked police car was outside.
Yeah.
So they're like, are you a police officer? I'm like, yeah, I work for the city of Miami. I'm a motor officer.
Yeah.
So then they're like, she didn't make it. And I go, what do you mean she didn't make it? Like, I was like, you know, complete shock. Just what are they telling me?
Yeah.
Like, just wasn't calculating in my head. And they're like, yeah, she was involved in an accident and she didn't make it. And I'm like, where? And they're like, oh, at this intersection in this street. And I'm like, I just went by there 3 hours ago on my way home. And they're like, yeah, unfortunately, that's where she got hit. So I had literally passed by the intersection.
Mm.
And that's why I said I didn't think anything of it, because I thought it was just an accident and they were redirecting traffic. So
you saw the the roadblock.
The roadblock, but I didn't get to see the scene.
Right.
Because it was off to the next block, basically. Mm-hmm. And they were redirecting the traffic around there. So I didn't get to see it. Not that I think I would have recognized it, because the impact was so strong. It basically hit my truck that she was driving and pushed it half a block down and flipped it down the road. That's mm-hmm. how hard. I think the female that was driving was anywhere from 60 to 70 miles an hour on a surface road and blew through a flashing red. So, yeah, my whole world is completely just destroyed. I don't know what to do, what to think at this point. I'm just like, you know, it's just not going through my head that, like, she's gone. Like, I can't believe this. Like, you know, this has got to be like I'm having like a bad dream or something. So I start replaying the timeline based on what they're telling me. So my sister that day was going to a church retreat up in Tampa. The church that she was going to was up by Miami Lakes, so she had to get there around, I think, like 5 o'clock, and they were leaving by like 5:30 on a bus that they had chartered to go to Tampa for the day and come back. So she left the house early, and about 4:20, she's crossing this intersection. Based on the two witnesses at scene, they said that she had the flashing yellow. She stopped. She made a complete stop. And after she stopped, as she proceeded, here comes the the fugitive through the intersection, 60 to 70 miles an hour, blows through a flashing red and basically crashes into my sister, killing her instantly right on the driver's side. And I'm pretty sure you're going to show the pictures and everything.
Yeah, I have the pictures, and I can we'll definitely put them up so everyone can understand.
So she gets hit, and basically the car rolls, I believe, twice and winds up almost half a block down the street. Then I'm still replaying, you know, like, okay, that's what happened. And then I remember while I was asleep, I heard an air unit or a rescue helicopter flying over by my mom's house. And it was the rescue helicopter going to pick up the fugitive. Mm-hmm. Not my sister, because my sister basically died on scene,
mm-hmm.
but the fugitive. So she goes to the hospital. They tell me we're going to be going to the hospital to talk to her, and we're going to be doing a blood draw because we believe that, you know, she might have been intoxicated at the time based on what they're seeing, I guess, at the scene. So they start their investigation. At this point, they're like, do you need anything else? I'm like, nope, you know. I got to start calling my family now. So the hardest thing I've ever had to do was, and my mom wasn't there. My mom was taking care of two elderly people in another place. So she would stay over the weekend to take care of these elderly people. So I had to call my mom, and without telling her over the phone,
yeah,
hey, I need you to come back to the house to break the worst news you would have to ever tell your mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then once I got my mother back to the house, then I had to call my dad and tell him to come to the house.
So you have to do it again.
And then my nieces were staying at another house, so I had to get them to come over so that I could break the news to them. So that was...
Who was their... That was their mom.
That was the mom, yeah. Yeah. They were 9 and 12.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you tell a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old your mother's gone?
Yeah, it's...
Your mother's gone because of somebody that just, you know, wasn't thinking, doesn't care, however you want to put it. There's no... Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what builds to that is that instead of them taking responsibility for their actions, then they become a fugitive. So we're going through all that with my family. I start finding out, you know, they did the blood draws for her blood. They send it to the lab. They're like, it's going to take a couple of weeks to go to the lab and get the results back. Takes about 3 weeks. By the time the blood test results come, that they go to pick her up, she's gone.
Was she gone from the hospital? Because they airlifted her.
No,
she
got out of the hospital, I think, a couple of days later. I think she had like a messed up leg or something. I don't know. And then the detectives actually went to her house. So they went to the hospital, and then they followed up a couple of days later at the house. They had witness statements already signed from the two witnesses on scene. And then they went to her house and interviewed her. And in there, she says she was drinking martinis. She was hanging out at Flanagan's, and then she was driving out and blacked out. And that's it. She doesn't know what happened. It's pretty much her statement.
So the question I want to say, I know the audience pretty well, it's going to be asked is that there wasn't at the time, there's not enough, you know, in this instance, your sister lost her life, so it was a traffic fatality. There's somebody who was obviously drinking and driving, and they crashed. Is there not enough there to make the arrest, then do the blood draw, then add that to the evidence? Or how do you understand right. what I'm saying? Like, so this is a question that people are going to be like, right. What happened there? Where was that time delay?
So the blood draw takes time. Like I said, yeah. It took 3 weeks mm-hmm. To come back. But not only that, on these kind of cases, you want to make sure you have everything done before you make an arrest. Because
yeah.
if not, what happens is then it starts what's called a speedy trial motion. And if you're not ready to take that case to trial in 180 days, a defense attorney could go before a judge and dismiss it, saying the state's not ready. We request a dismissal, and they'll dismiss it.
Mm.
So you want to make sure you have some of the key components at least,
mm-hmm.
you know, done. One being the blood work,
yeah.
you know, the statements, the scene, you know, the diagramming, the measurements and all that. And then, yeah, then you could go and affect the rest. But without the blood test results, let's say it gets delayed and you go past the 180, you just,
yeah,
basically the case, yeah, you lose
or
the case.
If you go to trial without that, the defense attorney can create reasonable doubt, which is part of our justice system. So they get that reasonable doubt.
Right. Which in this case,
the blood test, they go
yeah.
right here on paper.
Paper.
Which in this
plus
case,
the witnesses.
Yeah.
which in this case you have when somebody gets airlifted, they can't do the roadside test. No. If they're incapacitated, you can't get them to do the breath. So the way to do it is you have to draw blood. And in order to draw the blood, you have to request, I believe, a warrant, right? You get a warrant, and then you can draw the blood.
Right. And they got the warrant. They did that. They did that. That's probably the most reliable way to get a test, a BAC, is through blood.
Yeah.
You could blow, and it'll give you good readings, but the most accurate that I've heard has always been blood. Because and it's either blood, breath, or urine.
And isn't blood on a serious bodily injury or even a death type case, isn't blood almost a given that a warrant would be issued?
Issued, yeah.
No.
Yeah, and then there's no issues with, my client didn't consent to breath or urine. You know, you guys violated his rights. That we got to go and get a warrant for.
Yeah.
Which,
so it's all legal. In this case, the blood alcohol levels came back. What was that?
0.018. So she was double, almost going into triple.
0.018. Yeah.
Because Florida is 0.08. That's just the legal limit.
Yeah.
You're so there's 0.07. You've got alcohol in your system. Yeah.
Now blood comes back, and then there's that where she is no longer there when they're going to come pick her up, and they've been checking in on her. So what are you thinking as far as either whereabouts and where's the case at today?
So we did do another podcast recently, and we've been pushing on her picture and information on social media. I believe she's going to be somewhere with a large Hispanic community. That's just my personal opinion because she had only been here a year.
That's what I was going to ask you.
From Cuba.
Okay, so a year in Cuba and this happens.
Right, yeah. I don't even think she... Did she make a year? She might not even made a year. It was close to a year that she had been in the U.S. And she does this, and then, you know, she takes off as a fugitive. So we've pushed it out on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You did a post, and I appreciate it. So I believe she's going to be in an area with predominantly Hispanic. Mm-hmm. I don't think she's using her name. I'm almost positive she's probably using another person's name or alias and date of birth.
Because at this point, it's no longer local. The U.S. Marshals are involved, correct?
Correct. Yeah, it's because she's a fugitive. Mm-hmm. She fled to avoid prosecution.
And so from that blood test, would then her DNA have been captured, that if some sort of a DNA hit comes up for something else involving her, it might be able to attach? Or do you think there's...
I don't know about the DNA part, but I do know we have her fingerprints. So if she's ever fingerprinted, it will hit on her prints.
A DNA thing, I don't know if they're still able to get that evidence. Man, DNA, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm thinking you've got the blood. Like, that's the best way to get your DNA, I would think.
But they didn't... Freddie Ponce had something like that where the DNA...
But, I mean, obviously the DNA has to pop back
up. Yes,
it's not like your driver's license is connected to your DNA. For the people out there, it's not like that. But it's if something happens in the future and the DNA is wrong.
We're just trying to bring this fugitive back to pay for what, you know, she did and answer for what she did. So, but to continue, so maybe different name. You
for
got
sure,
a feeling,
different name,
different look. We're working on an aged photo. Hopefully, by the time this podcast airs, we'll have that so we can just put it up now. What we think she might look like. 17 has years have passed.
Like the progression, because I know you've posted the other pictures I've seen.
Yeah,
so you'd be able to show a better progression for somebody.
Yeah, and then we're just asking if anyone has any information. We'll put it for sure in the podcast. We'll blast those clips out. There is a reward.
Correct. Right? There is. So it's if you have any information, knowing where she's at.
Yeah.
You don't have to say anything or do anything. Just call Crime Stoppers, which is 305-471-TIPS.
Yeah.
And they'll put it up on the screen. But anything leading up to her arrest would basically, the reward would be issued through Crime Stoppers, which is $10,000.
Right, so there's a reward of $10,000 for anyone who has information that can lead to the arrest that has to be collected through Crime Stoppers.
Correct. And the reason they do it through Crime Stoppers is they don't want people calling the police departments or different entities because they don't all communicate. So everything's run through Crime Stoppers. So like I said, the only thing I'm asking for is if somebody knows her whereabouts, and I'm pretty sure somebody out there does. You could remain anonymous. Crime Stoppers is not going to ask you for your name or anything like that. You can remain anonymous and, you know, just give the information on her. You know, all we're asking for is closure for my family, for my mother, for her two daughters that have gone 17 years without growing up with a mother because of this person's carelessness and recklessness, and then not even facing, you know, what she did wrong, you know, instead of becoming a fugitive.
Yeah.
And doing whatever she's been doing. So somebody out there knows where she's at. Her family knows.
Yes, her family's still here, right?
They're still in the city, yeah. They're still living in the same city, same address and everything. But there's been numerous attempts to talk to them, and they play the I don't know routine, you know, which I know they know.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the only thing I'm not asking, you know, it's the only thing I'm asking for is to please share this as much as possible with everyone they know, because somebody out there, whether they know her personally or it's their next door neighbor, their coworker, she's somewhere.
Yeah.
Whether she's in the U.S. or in, you know, South America somewhere, she's somewhere that somebody's seen her and knows where she's at. And that's all I'm asking for. You know, the last thing I want is for, and it's something I can't stop, you know.
Yeah.
For somebody to get the same knock I got 17 years ago.
Yeah. That's
you know, the worst feeling ever for anybody to get, whether because I'm a cop or not. It's something I don't want anybody to receive. And it keeps on happening because of just people's carelessness, recklessness, and just disregard, you know.
Yeah, and we say, and we try to urge everybody, like, if you're planning to go out, to plan to drink, plan to that on that ride share app, plan on a responsible way of getting there and getting home.
Yeah.
Take
an Uber, take a Lyft. I mean, there's so many things now that could prevent it. And, you know, to destroy somebody else's world and, you know, for them to be carrying this. And like I said, it destroyed me. And I've been a guest speaker for the Candlelight Vigil for MAD.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've spoken to several family members, and it just kills me talking to them because there's so many people that have had the same thing, you know, happen to them, where, you know, they're getting a knock at the door and they're being told, you know, that their loved one's killed, you know, or got killed because of somebody's just recklessness and disregard.
Well, have you been doing any Spanish media or anything?
That's what I'm working on next, is doing it in Spanish with some of the media outlets in Spanish to get it pushed out. Because like I said, I think that's going to be the key, is the Spanish.
Yeah.
The Spanish news media, or people that watch Spanish news, that'll probably be able to say, hey, wait a minute, I know that person.
All right, so to the listeners out there, to the people listening, let's help Jack out. If you have anybody in any kind of Spanish media or any kind of Spanish social media influencer, or can get in contact with them to have them on so we can help spread the message and continue to put out the message, let's help bring some justice here to Jack's family. Please reach out to us on our DM so we can then hook them up and set them up to where to go. Anything and anything can help. Anything and everything can help. So please help us out. And when we catch her, we'll share with everyone that we were successful. So I'm looking forward to that day, and let's continue to push, and we're not going to stop like Marines do, right?
Never quit.
Yeah.
Never quit. Just keep on going. That's why, you know, and if I could tell something to the audience out there, never give up. If you're going through this or have been through this, never give up in, you know, in seeking that justice for your family members, because you are that person that needs to push it. Nobody else is going to push it but you.
Absolutely. And you know, and you can take that and apply that to your life. It's like, no one's going to do anything. You have to be that person to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how many obstacles, look at obstacles as opportunities.
Yeah. So, well, I want to thank you for joining us on the podcast, and you're welcome back. And we'll talk about Iron Man stuff some more, and we'll talk about some other things. I want to hear what you said, Kona, right? That's
Kona. So Kona's in Hawaii. It's in the Big Island of Hawaii.
And you said by next year you want to do that?
Yes.
Okay.
That's
so
my goal.
Hopefully, before that podcast, we can have you on another time saying that, hey, we found the fugitive. That would be great. That would be some good news. Yeah. Thanks again. Thanks for joining. Oh, I'm coming over the top.
And thank you for the mug. I appreciate it.
There you go.
Cool. And I could have my my Black Rifle coffee with it.
There you go. And if you want one of those mugs, they're no longer for sale.
No.
But you got to join the show and you get your mug. That's your thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We've got a couple left.
It's like having a SWAT shirt now, right?
Yeah. You got to earn it.
There's only two ways to get a SWAT shirt, but we're going to leave that for the next episode. We'll talk to you later. All right. Take it easy.
Thank you, Dick.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Calling all units. Calling all units. Donut Shop has a fresh dozen. Go ahead and take a 1040.